Soccer fans, gear up at Soccer 90, DFW's largest in-store collection. Real Madrid, Man U, Juventus, FC Dallas, and a whole lot more. Soccer 90 at Toyota Stadium, next door to the National Soccer Hall of Fame in Frisco, or soccer90.com. Soccer 90, love it, live it, wear it.
It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is the Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Now, our very own yellow and red card, Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
And Matarazzo now as animated as he's been all season. Florian Müller's up for it. Marmoush to take, it's on! Oh, it's there! It's Sasha Kalajdzic! Stuttgart! Score the goal that will mean Bundesliga survival! It's the most dramatic goal this stadium has witnessed in many a year. Sasha Kalajdzic at the double.
Oh, the scenes in Stuttgart. Hello, P1s. Welcome to another edition of the Kick Around. This is show 295, otherwise known as the FA Cup Final Show. This is the Ticket's very own soccer show, Saturdays 2 to 4. I'm Andy, and next to me... No, it's not Peter. It's the Kick Around super sub, the great Tyler Kern. Tyler, ooh, welcome.
Happy to be here, Andy. On such a day, too.
On such a day. We shall talk about that Stuttgart scene when a certain club barely saved themselves from relegation at the death. And it's very fitting you're here because you are the Bundesliga expert. So we shall talk a lot of Bundesliga later on in the show. Also filling in today for EA... at the anchor is Creighton. So, Creighton, welcome.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
And, of course, we have our regular Sam and Jacob with their regular roles. We do have other regulars coming on today. Buzz will talk a little FC Dallas. And if you haven't checked the standings, FC Dallas is in third place. They'll play the other third place team. They're tied for third, the LA Galaxy. So, big game. We'll talk to Buzz and Daniel. We'll talk about the ending to the Serie A season, which is getting a little crazy.
Yes.
In very typical Serie A fashion. The first hour, though, we'll talk a lot about football in the UK. The race for first, I don't think it's a race anymore, Tyler. So
packing it in?
Yeah, maybe.
Well, not this again.
Yeah, I think Man City might have wrapped this up. But we'll also talk about the pillow fight for fourth and the relegation battle and whether Jesse Marsh can save Leeds from relegation. There's lots of money at stake with all that because the championship is also playing their playoffs to see which team is promoted along with Fulham and with the Cherries. So
yep.
We talk about that coming up. But first, of course, we have to talk about the FA Cup final, which took place today. And what a great day for fans and supporters of Liverpool. And it was a rematch of the Carabao Cup final.
Right
down to exactly how it played out.
Yeah, penalties and everything, right? And the only difference was that in the Carabao Cup final, right, Chelsea subbed in Kepa for Mendy, their typical right. goalkeeper. Kepa proceeded to save none of the penalties and then miss his own.
Right, yeah.
As the 11th taker.
Right, yeah. Everybody made their PKs in that first game,
yes.
That first final, except Kepa, who was the last shooter, and he missed his, and that's how Liverpool went on to win the Carabao Cup final. Their only trophy thus far, because Liverpool, as we know, they're vying for the four-trophy season.
The quadruple.
They had the least important one in the trophy case, the Carabao Cup.
Yep.
It's getting a little bit tougher to win now the Premier League, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. And, of course, they made the Champions League final, but they play Real Madrid, who's on fire, and that's a different story. So, for me, Liverpool, this was a pretty important game for them.
Yeah. How do you categorize success for Liverpool this season? Let's say you win Champions League, FA Cup, and Carabao Cup, but don't win the league.
No, that's still definitely a successful season.
That has to be,
yeah,
right?
Of course, especially
most other teams would kill for a season like that.
Yes, and losing out and finishing second, barely second, to a team like Man City. I mean,
yeah.
Liverpool has had one of its greatest seasons in their history. They've, I think, set a record for number of goals scored. They're winning all these trophies, but imagine if they had lost the FA Cup final, and then they go on to lose the Champions League final.
And all you come away with is the Carabao?
Yeah. It would have been the most disappointing great season in the history of Liverpool, at least in many other big clubs. So I think this was important. It was also important for Chelsea, in a way, to win a trophy.
Right.
Even though finishing third, which is where they're going to finish, is not a bad end to their season. Peter and I had both predicted that they would win the title this year. So in some ways, in some respects, maybe it is a little bit of a disappointing season for them.
I would say kind of, yeah. They came in with so much momentum into the season. Obviously, the defending, defending Champions League winners, and looked like under Thomas Tuchel they were really building something. And you came into the season thinking, okay, surely they're going to find a way to make Romelu Lukaku work in that team, and they're going to be better for it, score more goals, that sort of thing. But at times, Chelsea, it felt like no team did less with more, right? You look at how much talent they have around the field, and they had some injuries, and obviously the injuries to both wingbacks really hurts the way that they like to play under Thomas Tuchel, but I think it's a disappointing season for them.
Yeah, and crashing out as well. And, well, they were another victim of the Real Madrid juggernaut crashing out of the Champions League. Now, this is the fifth time in 6 years that Chelsea reached the FA Cup final. They won it in 2018, but they'd lost the last three straight.
Wow.
Counting today's. So, again, it was, I think, an important trophy for the club to win. Now, it was a weird game in a way because momentum kind of changed a lot of times. I felt Liverpool was the much stronger team early on.
Yeah.
First 20 minutes, it seemed like it was going to be a blowout.
I couldn't believe Liverpool hadn't scored in the first 25 minutes or so. It was just chance after chance after chance, and they were just whiskers away, it felt like, so many different times.
And you know when that happens. If you're a supporter of that team, you know that, okay, this is going to come back to haunt them. And sure enough, momentum did change, and Chelsea kind of started to pick it up towards the end of the first half. And heading into halftime, I think Chelsea felt fortunate that they were still tied. And then the second half, the start of the second half, was the exact opposite. Chelsea then came out guns a-blazing, and Liverpool had to withstand a little bit of pressure. And at that point, I started to think, you know, a few guys on Liverpool's side started to go down with injuries. Salah had to leave the game. They looked fatigued. And this is all part of trying to balance all these tournaments they're playing, all these competitions, injuries, rotation, all these things that Klopp is having to deal with, and it's kind of taken its toll too, as well as Klopp-managed teams tend to fade towards the end of seasons because he really wears them out with the way they play. So,
now, do you think that will be the case given how much depth this Liverpool team has and how they can kind of rotate things? I realize
it's helped a lot.
I think this was their 60th or 61st game of the season across all competitions, which is a ton.
It is.
That is a ton. It's the case for both teams, but Liverpool is definitely more of a pedal to the metal type team in terms of what's demanded athletically from their players.
For sure. More than City, even though City plays the high press and that style, it's Liverpool really that really plays that to the T. And the compressed schedule due to the fallout of COVID that we're still dealing with also had its, it played its toll.
Not to mention Mane and Salah both at the Africa Cup of Nations.
Great point. So this is these are all the things that Klopp is having to manage. And I feel like today, I don't know if he's now thinking punting with, in regards to the league title.
Yeah.
There's still a chance, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I think he was definitely thinking a little bit about the Champions League final. You have to be thinking about it because it's only 2 weeks away. And Hetsala, when he went down, I don't know the extent of the groin injury. That's a little bit worrisome. But Van Dijk coming out in extra time, I think that was a precautionary move. In the end, it all worked out because they were able to win the PK shootout. But you could just see today how fragile this Liverpool team is and how they're walking on such a fine line.
It's true. It's true. However, I do want to draw a distinction between these two teams and what the future looks like for both of them, right? Chelsea, so much uncertainty around ownership situation, and that's starting to get figured out, but they're losing the majority of their back line for next season, right? With guys like Antonio Rudiger and Christensen leaving after this season. A lot of uncertainty around them moving forward. Whereas you look over at the Liverpool side and you bring in a guy like Luis Diaz and he comes in and hits the ground running. You bring in guys like Diego Jota in the offseason and it's been better than I think anybody anticipated. And so you just see, and again, with Klopp re-signing for two more years all the way through 2026, you just feel this stability for Liverpool moving forward, even if the league isn't within their grasp this year. And then you look and contrast that with Chelsea to a certain extent. It feels like two teams just in different spots given how much stability they have.
Yeah, I think part of that is due to, I think Liverpool is just much more measured and, I don't want to say organized in how they assemble a roster and how they think about the future, but they're a little bit more prudent about planning for the future than a team like the Chelsea has been used to. Frankly, you know, Chelsea has had a lot of money and they've done things, you know, they've rotated coaches in and out. And, I, you know, the lack of consistency and continuity, I think has hurt them a little bit in that regard.
You just, you wouldn't see a guy like Lukaku come in to a Liverpool side and just not fit and not work out. It just, it feels like, right? It seems like Klopp's ideology has so thoroughly permeated every aspect of that club that the decisions they make just work because it all fits within a framework. Whereas with Chelsea, it feels very...
Yeah.
We have enough money. Let's throw this against the wall and see if it works. And if it doesn't work, it's not a big deal. Now they're not in that space anymore.
No.
It just feels very uncertain, very unstable.
But if they pivot the right way, if new ownership pivots the right way and they start to assemble teams with the Liverpool type of thinking, because Liverpool has American owners and they're a little bit more fiscally responsible within the big club.
Yes.
It's all relative, right? But within the big club definition, they're more fiscally responsible but smart about how they spend their money. I think Chelsea's going to pivot and start doing it that way a little bit more. Now, speaking of Americans, Pulisic didn't look bad today.
No.
But he's one of the several players, not just him, on both sides that had clear scoring opportunities. And today, I mean, I think the story is that the game ended 0-0, but there were chances galore on both sides. The finishing was not great today.
Yeah.
And Pulisic was part of that, although he did create some chances for Chelsea.
It's true. I feel like we're in this weird spot with Pulisic where I would love to see him go to a place where he could play game in, game out, start more often and that sort of thing. And you see lots of fans kind of clamoring for that quite a bit, right? Ah, Pulisic, why on the bench again? And so he gets the opportunity to start today and everyone's thinking, okay, great. And he did. He created some great things. And you wonder, okay, if he was playing at a more regular pace, does he finish some of these chances? Is he more confident? But then at the same time, you look over and you're like, he's had so many injuries throughout his Chelsea career already. He can't be a game-in, game-out guy, can he? Like, if he were to go somewhere else, like there's rumors of Juventus wanting him, let's say. If he were to go to Juventus, could he be a game-in, game-out guy in Serie A? I honestly don't know.
Sure, why not? Because of the injury? Like, because of the fragility?
Yeah, yeah. Fragile, as they say in Italy. Yeah, fragile.
Maybe we asked Daniel Robertson, who will be on with us to talk Serie A, but that's a good question, you know, and he's got one of his best friends in the sport playing at Juventus as well, right?
Would be interesting.
Yeah, McKinney. So, I thought, you know, it part of me too, when Pulisic came out, like part of me, even though I'm, you know, obviously rooting for Liverpool, is like, man, wouldn't it be cool if he was in and he like converted one of the PKs, the winning PK, but...
Yeah. It feels like he's been so close, just whiskers away from those big moments, right? Like, he had the opportunity to score in the Champions League final at the end to make it 2-0 when Chelsea won it last year. And, just feels like he's whiskers away from those gigantic moments that would kind of catapult him into a new stratosphere. And he's just consistently just slightly off.
Right.
But you can see that he's there, right? And he's still just 23. And so it's going to be a big 6 months for him.
He's young. He's young. Lots of future ahead. I do want to give Klopp a shout out, and it's not really Klopp, it's probably his staff, his analytics staff. He made a substitution towards the end of injury time, and that was getting Robertson out and getting Tsimikas in.
Right.
And, you know, Robertson didn't look more fatigued than any other, you know, player. And I wondered, and I thought to myself, I wonder if they know something about Tsimikas and the way he takes PKs, or Chelsea hasn't studied him and doesn't know him, and they're just throwing him in because he's an unknown. And sure enough, he steps up to take the seventh,
yes,
right?
The one that won.
So kudos to the Liverpool staff for that substitution and knowing that he would come up big in that situation. So. Sorry, Tyler. Today is the Liverpool show. No, just kidding. We're gonna change. You know, and speaking of Liverpool, we do have to talk about the race for first and how it may not be a race anymore. You know, I mean, I think they're still hopeful and they go on with hopes of winning both the Premier League and the Champions League trophy. But should they be hopeful?
A lot kind of depends on a game tomorrow, and we'll probably need to talk about that.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk about that next on The Ticket. Hey, so you know, next weekend is the Soccer Hall of Fame. Welcome to the Kick Around, by the way. The Soccer Hall of Fame induction ceremony takes place next Saturday, and I get to attend. So you are coming back to the Kick Around. You're going to take my place. You switch chairs, right?
Just swap chairs. Short commute.
Yeah, and so
just live here during the
right. You can just you know, the George cot is still here, so you can just sleep there.
Yeah.
Soccer 90, our proud sponsor, in recognition that the Soccer Hall of Fame is having its induction ceremony this weekend, is having a special appearance this Friday. Ricardo Pepi.
Hey now.
Dallas's very own. Well. Texas's very own Ricardo Pepi will be at Soccer 90 Friday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. So check it out. Drop by. Check out. Do you have a favorite Premier League team, by the way, Tyler? I don't think we know this about you.
There's
a lot about you we don't know still. So
I really don't. I've never latched on and emotionally felt invested in a Premier League team.
Do you ever want to spin the wheel for it, or you'd rather not?
Maybe, I don't know.
Because then you're attached. Yeah, so if you want to remain kind of a neutral.
I kind of like being a neutral because then I don't feel bad about, you know what, I'm going to flip on Chelsea because Pulisic is starting today and I want to see him.
Right,
or
so you can spread the love
around. Yeah, or you know what, that matchup over there looks great. I just want to watch that game. I've kind of enjoyed just being a free agent and not feeling tied down.
Right.
I think if I... You know, I've always just followed the Americans around. So when Tim Howard was at Everton, I'd watch Everton. Dempsey was at Fulham, I'd just watch Fulham.
Go to Soccer 90, buy all the jerseys from all the European teams with the big Americans on.
Or we could spin the wheel for him today.
See, I don't know.
No, he doesn't want to be attached. I do know, like me, like lots of people that follow the Premier League.
Yeah.
There's a team, not necessarily that we love, but there's for sure a team we all don't like. A team we hate, right?
Yes.
And that's City. And we hate them because, I guess because they've been successful, but we don't hate all really successful teams. But
it's
because, you know, money comes from a nation state
the
and all that.
The nation state thing rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah. And they just win so much.
So dang much.
You know, and like heading into the second leg of the Champions League tie against Real Madrid. Remember how things were? Like, Liverpool was like neck and neck with them, putting a lot of pressure on City.
Yep.
People were like, oh, City's just falling apart. And after that game, when they had the meltdown in Madrid, when Madrid scored two goals from the 90th minute on to tie the game, send it extra time where they won it, then people were like, oh, City's done. You know, like, are they going to be able to bounce back from this and come back to the Premier League and this and that? And what City did instead, I think it was a 180 what people expected. They came back to the Premier League, won two games by a combined score of 10-1. And like, they just shut everybody up. They said, no, we're still the best. We're still the best team in the world. That was like a one-off, like a 5-minute fart, basically, right? I mean, they just gave it away in 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. They came up against this weird mystical superpower that Real Madrid just has over the Champions League, right? And also at the same time, Manchester City's like this unstoppable robot that only glitches out in the Champions League.
Yeah,
but
for
then,
some
but
reason,
then, yeah, resumes normal programming in every other competition and just obliterates. Yeah.
So they just pushed the button. Yeah. Pep had a few words with them in the locker room, and then they just pound two teams, 5-0, 5-1, 10 up. And what that did more than anything is it really, like, the goal, and it doesn't seem to matter a lot, but the goal difference now for City over Liverpool is at such a difference that even if Liverpool now ties City on points, they're not going to be able to tie him on goal difference or pass him on goal difference.
Yeah,
and
it's
then,
seven now.
Yeah.
So you would need City to just get absolutely obliterated by someone, which just doesn't feel likely.
Right, exactly. City has to lose a game. They have two left, whereas Liverpool would have to win both of theirs and win convincingly. City has to play at the Hammers at West Ham, and they host Villa. They're not easy games. Villa's a decent team, mid-table. The Hammers are good. They're looking for European placement. They're going to be motivated.
They could still catch Manchester United for a Europa League spot.
Right, exactly. And drop United to seventh, where they would have to play in the Conference League. That's another conversation.
That'd be so awesome.
And Liverpool has, again, not easy games at Southampton and Wolves. Two teams that are mid-table that are not bad.
Pretty much on the beach, though, already. Right? They're already on vacation. Like,
yeah,
they're not getting relegated.
Those two teams are not going up or down. Exactly.
They're not fighting for a European place. Sometimes those can be nice games for you.
Yeah. Or the other team plays without pressure and guys are having fun and Liverpool's like hurt and tired. And so I don't know. My feeling is I think now that the FA Cup is secured and the trophy is coming to Anfield or staying at Anfield because it was there, right? I think Liverpool needs to punt.
Punt on the
I was the one, and Sam, I know you're looking at me like this, but I was the one that was giving Liverpool hope months and months ago when everybody had given up on them.
It's true. I was giving you a hard time for your Liverpool math back in the day.
But I think this point, it's going to be too hard to catch City. Props to City. It's going to take a major meltdown for Liverpool to catch. And so I say now you just rest the guys, rotate as needed so to make sure that you take care of business in Paris against Real Madrid.
And once again, this feels like, what season was it? I guess it was the year before COVID. It was 18-19 where City won the league, but Liverpool won the Champions League.
Right.
It almost feels like that all over again.
And both teams want the opposite.
Both teams would easily swap with one another, those two titles, I feel like. You still feel that way, even having won the league once now?
Still
feel like
you
would rather
swap?
You
know the frustrating thing about playing with a team or supporting a team that is as good as Liverpool in this Premier League era is that it's still not good enough to win the title. That's the frustrating thing because City's so good. And now this will be their fourth in 5 years, you know, Liverpool being the one team that won it in those 5 years. And now the news comes out that they're getting a certain forward from the Bundesliga, a Norwegian forward. Haaland is now going to go and play at City for Pep. And it's just like,
I am surprised by this move. Because I thought the goal for him was always Real Madrid.
Madrid, yeah.
And the news that's kind of come out and some of the chatter has been that Manchester City convinced him by saying, look, you're only 21. Come spend 3 years here. You'll be 24.
While Pep is still here.
Yeah. Come hang out, play for Pep for 3 years, win a bunch of stuff, and then go to Real Madrid. Yeah. You have plenty of career ahead of you.
Benzema still has a couple years.
Yeah,
you know,
mess around with that. Come just hang out in Manchester for a few years. Your dad played here. Pep is here. We win all the time. It'll be really fun. You haven't won anything at Borussia Dortmund. Come win some stuff for a few years.
That's another conversation we're going to have, Tyler,
We'll have that later on. But that seems to be the conversation. Now, here's the thing to me. Everyone seems to unanimously love this deal for Manchester City. And it makes a lot of sense.
I think people are like irritated because the rich are getting richer.
Right. By loves this deal, I mean everyone seems to think this will be a smashing success.
Yeah. For City.
And I'm not so positive about it. And I know
Talk
this makes me crazy.
Talk to me, young Tyler.
I know this makes me crazy. And I know you're probably really excited to hear this because otherwise it sounds like they're getting another Terminator or something like that. Manchester City plays with the ball so much against bunkered defenses that are defending in their own penalties box. Erling Haaland has never played on a team that wasn't kind of a fast break style. Mm-hmm. He plays much better with a lot of open field in front of him with room to run in behind back lines. Think of the goals you've seen him score. They've been cutting, and they've been like full-on sprint 50 yards across the field to get in behind the back line, receive a pass.
And he crashes the box.
Exactly, that sort of thing. That's not how Manchester City's played. He's never been asked to be a back-to-goal guy that facilitates
the true
passes.
Nine. Like, he's a nine, and
he's
you tend to think of him as a true nine, but if you're going to play the true nine position with City, it's a different. You play it in a very different way, is what you're saying.
There's
and
a reason they wanted Harry
way?
Kane, right?
Yeah.
Harry Kane, who can drop in and play that kind of false nine role and play the facilitator.
So are you saying Haaland doesn't have the skills to post up and trap it?
I'm saying he's 21 and still a work in progress, and he's probably going to figure it out because he's a phenomenal soccer player. But I don't think it's going to be this instant success the way everyone seems to think. Now, watch. He's going to go score 4 goals on opening day next year, you know, or whatever, in the Community Shield or whatever the heck game is going to kick off the season. And I'm going to look like an idiot.
Because his pace, his goal-scoring pace, like he scores more than a goal a game, right, in Bundesliga, or he's close to
it.
It's just something ridiculous.
I think in the end, like his pace fell off a little bit. I think it was like 85 and 88 games for Dortmund over like 2.5 seasons. It's unreal. He needs to stay healthy.
He scored 6 goals in a game once in the under-20 World Cup, by the way.
Yeah, against Costa Rica, I think.
Honduras.
Oh, yeah, that's who
it
was. Yeah,
that kick-started his... Yeah. Well, actually, he was already a pro in the Bundesliga. Well, I think so many of these teams that are thinking that they have a shot at one day overtaking City, like next year, The Haaland news is just like a bucket of cold water. And I know, you know, as a Liverpool supporter, I need to be happy with what we've done. And we've certainly, you know, we've had good signings.
City, but, this is an interesting offseason for City, though. Raheem Sterling could go. Gabriel Jesus could go. Fernandinho is already leaving. Some kind of stalwarts of that team are leaving.
Is Pep saying?
There has not been an announcement that he's staying beyond 2023.
Yeah, no, but I kid.
I see.
You know, they have Pep.
I see your
They'll
point.
Be fine. They'll be fine. And, but it does make it very important, I think, with City perhaps getting stronger with Haaland. We'll see. Hopefully not, but we'll see. But it does make it very important to finish top four. If you're a club that aspires to win the title in the Premier League next year, you want to have a transfer window with the ability to acquire talent that wants to go to your team because you're going to play Champions League. So Chelsea will have that. Liverpool will have that. But this is where Spurs and Arsenal, they're going to be fighting for that fourth spot. And this is why getting that fourth place is really important. Other than the money, it's really important.
No, it's absolutely true. And it's going to be a fantastic battle to the finish, even if it is a pillow fight. So I guess we'll talk about
that. Yeah, let's talk about the pillow fight and money. Next on the ticket. It's
time. FC Dallas takes on the LA Galaxy later tonight. So we'll talk to Buzz Carrick about that coming up in the next segment. But right now, I'm Tyler Kern. Andy Swift is here. This is the Kick Around here on the ticket. Right now, Andy, let's talk about that battle for fourth place.
Peter calls it the Fruitcake Cup. I call it the Great Pillow Fight of 2022.
Look, I get where you're coming from with that, right? But in a certain way, is it unfair? Has City and Liverpool set such a high standard?
Of course it's unfair because it's hard to finish fourth in the Premier League. But I think it stems from the fact that every team, it seems like going back to late last year, you know, once the season was well underway, every team that seemed to be in the driver's seat to finish in fourth has just relapsed and like given it away, and another team has come in its place. Man United.
Leicester City, I think twice.
Leicester early on, then Man United, then West Ham got to that spot, and they're like, okay, maybe it's going to be West Ham. And then Arsenal, like, I think it was shortly after we came back from New Year's, it was like Arsenal was the team to beat. Like, they had, quote, the famous games in hand, and there's no way they're going to give up that fourth spot. And here we are, and they're about to give it away because now Spurs is right on their heels. And, you know, on the heels of the Spurs-Arsenal derby that was played midweek, and Spurs just spanked Arsenal. Now, there was a red card there early in the game. That changed everything. Of course it does, but Spurs ended up winning that game 3-0. And it almost seems now, because of who they play, that Spurs is in the driver's seat. Even though they're a point behind Arsenal, they do have goal difference, and they have a tad easier schedule.
Yeah.
Right?
Arsenal has Newcastle on Monday. That's a tough game.
Yeah.
I think Newcastle has gotten third most points since they hired Eddie Howe.
Yeah. They've been good, and now they're going to be a nation state. Well, they are a nation state now. They're just getting ready. Yeah. They're just getting ready for Premier League prowess over the next decade.
They got that Saudi money. And then Everton on the final day of the season.
And that game is going to be huge because Everton, maybe they'll be playing for
safety,
right?
But even if they're not, Everton has been playing well recently.
Right.
Knock on all kinds of wood in there for Sam. But
and then Spurs has Burnley and Norwich.
Ugh.
Right? I mean, that's not a cakewalk. No team is. And Burnley's fighting for safety as well. But I just feel like momentum is now on Spurs' side. And Arsenal is kind of like freaking out. And it's not just about, you know, finishing fourth to play in Champions League and having the ability to entice recruits, you know, to entice signings to come play for your club because you're in Champions League. And Sam put this together. I asked Sam to research the numbers a little bit. The difference between finishing fourth and finishing fifth, the monetary difference, you know, one plays Champions League, the other plays Europa League.
Yeah.
Is anywhere between 15 million, that's if like you go in and you basically don't advance, to 60 million if you go really far.
Whew.
$60 million difference between finishing fourth and fifth. We know what it means to get relegated and get promoted into the Premier League and what it does to your club, but that's a lot of money. even for these big clubs.
Yeah.
Coming out of COVID, that's a lot of cash flow that will certainly help, and it helps with sponsorships. So it's not just about, you know, Champions League and Europa League and the, you know, the prestige. There's a lot at stake here.
There's a lot at stake monetarily, but also you look over at Spurs. Actually, you can make this argument for both teams, but especially at Spurs, I don't know that Antonio Conte sticks around, even if they do make Champions League, but especially if they don't.
Right.
If they don't. There's a job that's going to be open at PSG.
There's another Champions League team that, you know.
Yeah. There's going to be a job open at PSG, maybe even Juventus.
Right.
Like, does he go back to Juve?
Yeah.
Like, there are other jobs that Antonio Conte could take where he's challenging for league titles, not for top four.
Yeah. But if Spurs gets fourth and they're in Champions League, he stays.
Yeah.
Right?
Probably.
He takes on that project.
Probably.
He's so wishy-washy, but I think...
He is extremely... I mean, he left Juve when he departed Juve. He left during their summer training camp. Like, they were on the field practicing, and Antonio Conte was like, nah, not for me anymore. I'm out. And so, like, that's a weird guy. That's a weird guy. Nobody really knows what he's going to do. Now, on Arsenal, you look over at the other side, that's a really, really young team.
Yeah.
That...
If they finish fifth, let's say, like, certainly if they finish top four, it's a successful season for Arsenal.
Yes.
For sure.
That's
right?
Massively overachieving from what I thought that they would do.
Yeah. If they finish fifth and are in Europa League, I think they still have to be happy. The reason it won't feel good when it's all said and done is because they were so close to fourth.
Yeah, it's
and if
how
they
it
ended
happens,
up not getting
right?
it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So often in sports, it's like that, right? Like, if you'd given us this at the beginning of the season, right. we would have bitten your hand off for it.
Right.
But the way things play out and the circumstances, you get your hopes up and you begin to believe, oh, we could be a Champions League team. Fourth is ours. And you get smacked around in a North London derby, and here you are, just a point up with two games left in the season with a tough schedule.
Now you get to go to Europa League and do that.
Better than United.
Yeah, and so United, I mean, it's a side conversation, but United, you know, depending on what the Hammers do, United could fall to seventh and play in the Conference League. And at that point, are you better off just finishing eighth? They can't, right?
Yeah.
They can only finish seventh or above. You'd rather finish Europa League because there's an opportunity there if you win Europa League to play Champions League next year, no matter what. But if you finish seventh, man, that's not good. You get a crammed schedule. Not a lot of payout for that, and then you have a new coach that's going to have to try to figure things out. So anyway, we'll talk about United in a couple of weeks when this league season is over. I guess next week is the last weekend for Premier League, so
that's
you'll
right.
get to talk about it with Peter. You got to hammer him about United season,
yeah, because
I never do. So.
I have some hot sports opinions on United, and you could see. I should save this for Peter, but the one thing you see in teams that are massively underachieving. Like Everton, like Manchester United, is you can see all the different iterations of different coaches and different decision makers that they've had over the last 5 to 10 years, and you see the remnants of, oh yeah, we were buying that guy for Louis van Gaal.
Yeah.
That guy's been gone now for 4 years,
again,
but you still have his players hanging out there in midfield.
It's the lack of consistency that hurts a lot of these clubs, and this is where City and Liverpool, because they've just had consistent staffs from the coach and his support staff, it's actually helped them separate from the rest of the pack. The consistency is a lot.
It doesn't feel like it, but Klopp is now the longest tenured manager in the Premier League.
That's unreal. Are you serious?
Yeah, once Sean Dyche got fired from Burnley, it became Klopp.
Wow.
And that consistency matters these days.
So, speaking of consistency, one team without a lot of consistency is Everton at the coaching ranks.
Yeah.
Who are now trying to get to safety with the latest coach who failed at Chelsea and looked like he was going to fail at Everton, but he's turned it around a little bit here at the end, and it looks like Everton is going to end up not getting relegated. They have three games in hand over Burnley. Burnley has three games in hand over Leeds, and Everton has three games in hand over Leeds. So it's really looking like Leeds is the team that will go down, and of course this affects us a little bit, and that we're fans of Jesse Marsh. I mean, at least Peter and I are. I don't know what you feel.
Oh, yeah, I definitely am.
But if he ends up not being able to keep Leeds in the Premier League, my feeling is Jesse Marsh takes the fall for not being able to do that, because they weren't in the relegation zone when he took over, even though the team was broken and, you know, it was going to be a difficult hill to climb, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that at one point he had dragged them out of it, right? They had a couple of wins, and it looked like
early on they were responding to him.
Yes.
But recently they're not, and most concerning are two red cards in two games, early red cards, and it's almost like a team without discipline. And, you know, I'm not saying that he's lost the locker room or anything like that, but, man, it's just been frustrating to be a supporter of Leeds, like, in a way, you know, like, I'm hoping they stay up.
Yeah.
And now they have two games that are winnable, Brighton and
Brentford.
But Everton plays Brentford as well. They play Palace. They play Arsenal. It's not an easy schedule.
No.
But they're 2 points clear of Leeds, so they just have to basically get a win. Burnley is the team that would compete with Leeds to go down.
I think so.
They play Spurs.
Spurs need that game.
Right. They play Villa, and they play Newcastle.
That's tough, man.
So that's a tough schedule, and that might save Leeds. What will save Leeds might be more Burnley's schedule than what Leeds does. The significance of getting relegated is about $35 million. We talked about how the difference between fourth and fifth was about $60 million. It's about $35 million because they're parachute payments, so you end up making about 55% of the revenue that you would make if you're in the Premier League from TV, and that keeps going a little bit. And it allows these clubs to go back and forth, like Norwich, like Fulham.
You see Fulham coming back right away once again.
So it's not as impactful because you do have a good chance of survival. Now, my question to you is, if Leeds does go down, do they move Marsh along, and do they go back to Bielsa?
No.
No?
No, they don't. They don't.
Bielsa's done. Because they love Bielsa.
They do.
Management loves Bielsa. The fans love Bielsa. The players love Bielsa. Everybody loves Bielsa.
You're seeing the results, though, of having Bielsa for as long as they did. They lost more man games to injury this year than any other team in the Premier League. By a long shot. Two important players, too.
Right.
To guys like Calvin Phillips, who that team just could not afford to lose.
Yeah.
And it was already a small squad.
It's a thin roster without a lot of depth that plays a tough system.
And what they did with bringing in Marsh was they didn't divert too far away from Bielsa's system. Just small tweaks. And that's kind of what allowed Marsh to hit the ground running to a certain extent.
Yeah, he kind of had to, right? You can't come in and drastically change things.
Yeah, but he wouldn't anyways. Like, they're stylistically similar enough. And they had scouted Marsh ahead of time in case Bielsa had left in the summer. Now, Marsh got the Leipzig job, which a lot of people expected. So he wasn't available in case Bielsa were to leave Leeds. But then when it became clear, okay, we need to move on from Marcelo Bielsa, it just has to happen. Marsh was the obvious choice because he was available and stylistically he fit. I think that they brought in Marsh for the long haul, regardless of whether he kept them up or not, because they had liked him ahead of time.
Yeah, right.
Had
seen
what
he could do.
That's
a good point, that they had scouted him prior and they liked what he's doing.
The challenge is Leeds has to pick up a point, because right now they're tied with Burnley. So even if all five games that the teams have left, you know, Burnley's three. Yeah.
Goal difference.
Their goal differential is 17 goals back or whatever. It's 20-something goals worse than Burnley's. So they have to pick up a point. Even if Burnley lose all three games, Leeds needs a point. So,
does he bring Chris Armas now that Chris Armas won't stay at United because of the coaching change? You know, Armas was Jesse Marsh's assistant at Red Bull New York.
Didn't work out for him at Red Bull, but maybe as an assistant, he works.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be shocking. Also, they really wanted to bring in Brendan Aaronson.
They did, right.
And
that's still, I think, a possibility, right?
If they stay in the Premier League.
Oh, like if they go to the
Salzburg
championship.
But Salzburg wants $25 million, and they're not going to have that to splash if they're not in the Premier League, like you were mentioning. That's why this is such an important battle down the stretch.
Right.
What it allows you to do. They probably lose Calvin Phillips, Rafinha, all of those star players if they go down.
Yeah, because the budget will get hit. But speaking of budgets, man, the implications, the monetary impact that getting promoted to the Premier League has on your budget is anywhere between $150 million to like $300 million.
That's insane.
And Fulham's come back up. They're one of the yo-yo teams, and the Cherries are back up, Bournemouth. But now we're looking for that third team, and it's down to four teams. The playoffs started yesterday. Luton Town tied Huddersfield 1-1, and then today Forest, Nottingham Forest, beat Sheffield United on the road 2-1. They play Monday and Tuesday to see who advances to the final, that game at Wembley, which is considered the richest game in the world in terms of the payout.
Yep.
The crazy thing is, like, two of these teams, Sheffield United and Huddersfield Town, we've had them in the Premier League recently, and they're mm-hmm. kind of one of those yo-yo situations. Forest used to be an institution in the Premier League. In yes. the 80s, they finished second a lot. They, I think, finished second as late as the mid-90s. They've won it before. Lots of history there. But there's one club, and that's Luton Town, who would make it to the Premier League for the first time ever. And, it, like, the if they... one advancement, one promotion, 1 year in the Premier League will be enough for that club. Historically, this is how it plays out. For them to stay in championship for a long, long time after that, mm-hmm. even if they get relegated. And this is like huge for this fan base because this team was like fourth yeah. tier, right? Not too long ago.
Yeah.
So for them, if they can advance out of these playoffs and make it all the way to Premier League, it's like it's a defining moment in the history of that club that will forever change that club.
If Luton Town, how about this? If Luton Town wins this playoff and gets promoted, I will be a Luton Town fan.
All right.
That is my solemn vow and commitment.
That's a dangerous game, friend.
No, I will be a Luton Town fan. Look, if they get relegated out of the Premier League, I'm still a free agent, you know, Premier League free agent. I'll just cheer for Luton Town.
No, that's not how that works.
Sure, no, but it means I can still watch
soccer fans.
No, it means I can still watch whatever game I want to watch on Saturday morning.
You know,
that's what I mean.
You do that anyway. You just don't get to be a fan.
You know, Dallas already has a big Luton Town fan.
It's Dan Crook.
Yeah,
that's
third degree contributor.
Speaking of third degree, Sorry, I stole your...
No, that's okay.
You take it away, Andy.
Buzz is next. And speaking of leagues that don't have promotion relegation, we'll talk a little MLS and FC Dallas next on The Ticket. Welcome back to the kick around here on The Ticket. I'm Andy. Tyler's next to me, taking Peter's place, who I think is up in New York. I'm not sure if he's up there on vacation or work. Hello, Peter, if you're listening. I'm sure he's listening to the show, too. He listens all the time. He's a P1.
P1 of the show?
He's a P1 of P1s. We're both, I think, day one P1s, Peter and I. So next weekend, the Soccer Hall of Fame up in Frisco is having its induction ceremony. And to commemorate that, Soccer 90 is having a special appearance. Ricardo Pepi is going to drop by the store and sign autographs between noon and 1 on Friday. Ricardo Pepi, FC Dallas homegrown player.
Didn't
US
get on the field today for
star.
Augsburg no. in their final game.
And now
of the season.
Bundesliga player. We can't say Bundesliga star yet, but he is
next
US
season.
National team player. So we'll talk a little bit more about Ricardo Pepi's future in the Bundesliga with our resident Bundesliga expert, Tyler. That would be you.
Hey, I'm already here. It's good.
But now we have, and we'd like to welcome our FC Dallas expert, Buzz Carrick. Buzz, are you there?
Yeah, hello, gentlemen. How are you today?
Hey, Buzz, so where are you geographically this weekend?
I'm actually down in Houston today.
They have a home game. Houston does.
The Dynamo, yes, they do.
So FC Dallas, Buzz, is in third place. They're tied for third. They play the Galaxy today, who they're tied with. They play at 9:30, Channel 21, by the way.
Yeah.
So is this like their first true test of the season, this road game against another really good team? I mean, is this kind of like, okay, now we're going to find out what this team is made of for the first time this season? Not, I mean, you know what I'm saying.
No, not, you know, they went up to New York, you know, and New York is a very good team, and they played New England, who last year was particularly good, although they started a little cold. More than just this LA game specifically, it's this road stretch where they had a road game in the Open Cup, and now they have 5 of 7 on the road, and it's against a run of teams, not just this LA Galaxy team, but, you know, also the teams that are coming up. Other than Vancouver, who's low down in the standings, the rest of the teams are all in the top half and even the top three, most of them are. So this is a very difficult May and June coming up, and you're going to learn a lot about whether the team is really a contender in the West or whether they're just a solid playoff team in the West. I think it's going to be one of those two things. So, but, yeah, this is a tough test. You're going up against a team that is number one in the league in terms of goals allowed, only allowing 7. Tied with FC Dallas, but when you go into somebody else's home turf, it makes them very difficult to break anybody down, and it's going to be very difficult for Dallas to get any goals today when you're going against a team as defensively good as the Galaxy are.
So, speaking of scoring goals, Velasco, the $7 million signing, looked good early on. Is he meeting expectations thus far? Are you happy with the way he's performed. Two goals, three assists, I believe, right?
Yeah. You know, when you have to always remember that he's 19 years old. And he's a very high-risk, high-reward player. He's going to do a lot of flashy things. He's going to have a lot of flashy moments. He's going to do some good things that are going to get you on the score sheet. But he's also going to make mistakes. He's going to make teenager-type mistakes in decision-making of when to perhaps not go for things. You know, you shouldn't go for it every time. You have to have some wisdom about the game. So he's had a couple of bad turnovers here and there, nothing that's really killed the team. But there certainly is some up-and-down play out of the young man. He is willing to go at anybody, anytime. And so there are some times when he's having not that great success rate at, like, dribbling pass players. But then one out of six times he does do it, and all of a sudden he's making these magical plays or doing great things, which is the kind of player he is. So, yeah, expectations are about what I expected certainly coming in.
So FC Dallas is on a league-best eight-game unbeaten run, which is nice, right? What's the sense around the team in terms of Nico Esteves kind of putting his stamp on things? Buzz, are they playing the way that he wants to see them play? Are we seeing Nico Ball fully playing itself out, or are they still a work in progress?
They're still a work in progress. Defensively, they're playing really well. Defensively, they started the season emphasizing the defense and correcting the defense as they should, as they were one of the worst defensive teams last year. But within maybe about a month ago, he and I started talking a little bit about the idea of now when you start working on the offense, they're implementing multiple formations, different types of tactics, different styles of tactics. So you're talking about a coach who's been, you know, and what is the third month of the season of his first season?
Yeah.
You know, he probably doesn't even really have the full roster until someday won it. You know, this is season one of his cycle. So we're nowhere near the finished product by any means, but the mentality is completely different. The focus is completely different. And so far, everyone's reacting positively to all those things. Significant management of minutes and workloads, which is going to be really, really important today, given what came out on today's injury report.
Yeah, a couple of key players out today, right?
Yeah, Jose Martinez and Martin Paz, which is a starting center back and starting goalkeeper.
That's not good.
Both those guys showed up on the health and safety protocol list, and so they're out. But they took almost the complete team, as near as we can tell, everybody with them, because they weren't coming back to Texas from L.A. They're going straight to Vancouver for Wednesday's game. So they basically took everybody. And with three games this week, you're looking at some rotation anyway. But obviously, when you have two players pop for health and safety, which can mean many things, but it generally speaking is related to COVID-19 in some capacity, you then worry about the rest of the team. What was the level of exposure? What do they have to go through for everybody because of this? Might you hypothetically lose somebody else from exposure when you learn things or whatever? So heavy burden on the team this week with three games in a row, two guys already out, who else might be out? Those are going to be interesting questions as they go forward. The obvious answers in terms of filling those two spots is Jimmy Maurer and Nett, who's been the goalkeeper here for a couple of years. And I would assume Nkosi Safari, who was the one player out of the Open Cup loss that I thought really helped himself in terms of getting minutes anyway. So those two changes should be fairly obvious.
So that does bring up an interesting point, and I guess a question of mine, and I don't know if you've discussed this with Nico or not, or he's brought it up, but Nico, you know, he's new here, and rotations are important, and guys go down because of COVID and other injuries, but also heat is an issue. The daily training in the Texas heat is an issue and has been an issue for not just FC Dallas and the Burn, and it's professional teams that play in Dallas. The Rangers, we've known historically that summer playing has affected their performance. Is Nico prepared for what's coming? Does he know what July will be like? Because it's the daily training wears on you, right?
Yeah. You can tell him about it, but until he experiences, and he has, of course, staff that have been through it, and he has training people here that have been through it. So he and I have talked about it. They're already managing workload aggressively. It's actually been a relatively nice spring, so they haven't had to move training up yet, but he knew that eventually they would have to get to cooler parts of the day. And the last couple of weeks, they've been actually already taking days off during the week to try and mitigate the workload on these players. You know, when they feel like they've got tactical things in a good place and they're coming off of a game or coming off of multiple games, they're taking plenty of time off. And don't forget, too, there's always the five subs now, which allows you to take guys out earlier than you have in the past and get guys. So a lot of rotation is happening almost by early subbing and large numbers of subbing. It's all part of the way of the patterns, anticipating that the heat's going to get really bad. you know, he says they have it in mind. He says they have it in hand, and we're going to see. You know, you can only do so much planning probably ahead of time, and you can only assume that he's listening to the people who've been here through it before, and hopefully they'll have a good handle on it.
So far this season, maybe the biggest winner under Nico Estevez has been Jesus Ferreira, right? Tied for the league lead in goals. Did anyone see this coming? Did you see this coming, Buzz? I mean, because to me, I mean, I thought Jesus would kind of slot in there nicely in kind of a false nine role and play a functional kind of maybe Roberto Firmino type position here for FC Dallas. But seven goals already in the season and seems to just be on fire right now, kind of playing this role for this team. I know I didn't see that coming. Buzz, what are your thoughts on what Jesus Ferreira has been able to do so far?
I didn't think it was going to be quite at this level. If you look back at his highest scoring season before this, which I believe was 2019, if I remember the year correctly, it was when the first part of the year he played as a nine.
Yeah.
And the second part of the year he moved to the back. And he had a whole lot of scoring success when he was the nine. And then he dropped back to the 10, and he didn't score as much as you would expect. So if you'd extrapolated out that 2019, I think it was, to a more consistent whole season, you get much higher numbers than what was already his best season as a scorer. And then on top of that, you add the confidence he gained from going to the national team and playing the same way with a coach that plays the exact same system. And then also you add a winger like Alan Velasco and a winger like Paul Areola, who attract so much attention by themselves and require both the center backs to focus on them as well as on Jesus Ferreira. And you add in Jesus' own movement, and you add in Paxton Pomykal coming up from underneath and Brandon Savinia coming up from underneath as needing to be tracked also. All of a sudden, Jesus is not getting double-teamed like he might if he was playing like as a pure nine, you know, as a pure high nine. And so his movement and all that talent who's coming at the box is creating enough distraction that Jesus is finding a lot of success and a lot of space, and it's working out for him. And to his benefit, he's at his best when he is a quick-trigger shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he can dribble, but he's his best finishing when he's not messing around, and he's done a really good job with his efficiency this season in pulling the trigger relatively quickly, and it's paid off.
So tonight, the Galaxy, 9:30, Channel 21, in LA, obviously, and then they play Vancouver midweek. Do you know if they're just going straight to Vancouver, or are they coming back to Dallas before they head out to Vancouver?
Straight to Vancouver, and they took much more of the squad, the whole team, as near as we can tell. And so they would have all the roster depth they need to rotate, depending on what happens with, you know, health and safety between now and then. But I would imagine that you're going to see some rotation. Vancouver's in last place, where they were when I looked 2 days ago. So I assume they're still in last place. So that's probably a game that's ripe for some level of squad rotation. You have a couple of positions that are in competition anyway. And then if you bring in a couple more guys late as subs in the LA game, then maybe they could start the next game. So there's some flexibility in play there probably with the Vancouver game on Wednesday.
So a point on the road today against the Galaxy, definitely a good result. We'd be okay with that. But if I hear you correctly, because Vancouver's in last, we want the 3 points there, right? So 4 points from this road trip. Is that what you're saying? This is the expectation?
That would be exciting. They've yet to win on the road. If you could get even two ties out of it, it would be fine. But if you can get a win in either one of these games, that's something to be positive about. There is a school of thought that you might rotate in for the LA game, since that's a much, much better team, and then you can run full strength on Wednesday and try and get a win that way. But I think when you have, you know, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, or Sunday, I don't remember what game the second game is, you probably want your best guys on the weekend and probably rotate on a Wednesday.
Buzz Carrick, ThirdDegree.net. Buzz, thanks for joining us here on the Kick Around today, sir.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Excellent, excellent stuff. Coming up next on the Kick Around, Andy, let's go to Italy. You like
crazy.
Italy.
It's the craziness of Serie A.
The Sorois are back from Italy, but we're going to go there next with Daniel Robertson. So stick around. More Kick Around right after this.
$1 Ritas, man.
How about that?
Wednesday. Wednesday is the Europa League final.
Wednesday is the Europa League final. We're going to talk about that in the final segment of the show. Eintracht Frankfurt against the Rangers. They've actually already had to warn. The Europa League final is being played in Spain. They've already had to warn the Scottish fans against partying too hard.
In Sevilla.
But yeah, good luck telling Scots not to drink. And
don't destroy Sevilla, please.
Please. We like our city. And Scots are like, we like our...
I'll say this about Scottish
fans. We like our sangria.
Yeah, Scottish fans will drink, but they party drink. They don't aggressive drink.
Okay, it's not like Irish drinking?
They're also part.
They're party drinking.
Yeah. Maybe the English.
They're good fan bases to have at major tournaments and that sort of thing. Yeah. It's always good to see them.
There's others that are a little bit more aggressive when it comes to their drinking.
A little bit too destructive.
A little bit more out.
Okay. Yeah.
So, but
yeah.
Let's not generalize.
All right. Let's move away from that. Let's talk about Italy. Let's talk Italy right now with Daniel Robertson. Daniel, how you doing, man?
Hello. Hello, boys. Andy's hung out with a lot different Scotsmen than I have.
Are they destructive?
I mean, it's all relative, right?
Yeah. I just remember the 82 World Cup when Brazil played Scotland. Of course, I wasn't there. I was a kid watching on TV. So, you know, of course I got the true sense. No. But it was just a big party before the game, I guess, because Scotland knew that Brazil was just going to spank them. So let's party instead. And
yeah, that's fine.
No
expectations. Yeah, right. Okay.
Let's talk Coppa Italia, Daniel, because this was a big game. It took place on Wednesday. Inter beat Juve 4-2, controversially perhaps, as Inter was awarded two penalties in this game.
The controversy.
So give us your take on this, Daniel, on the two penalties, but also just the game in general, what it means for Inter and what it means for Juventus specifically.
Yeah, it was a huge game, and for Juventus, you know, this was the chance to not have their first trophy-less season in over a decade. And, yeah, I mean, full of controversy. The VAR alarm was just going off constantly. And, you know, I wanted to get an unbiased opinion on this because basically a beautiful goal by Nicolò Barella early in the match to take the lead for Inter. Juventus battles back. They score twice in 5 minutes in the second half. They look like they have the game in hand. About 10 minutes left in the game. Ball sent into the box. Bonucci is behind Lautaro Martinez. Lautaro links his leg around Bonucci's and kicks out. Referee awards a penalty. They check it on VAR. They still give the penalty. Then, in overtime, and it goes to extra time. In extra time, maybe a ticky-tack, probably more of a penalty, but it wasn't called on the field. Then they give it on VAR. The other one was called on the field, and VAR upheld it. Guys, I had to get your third-party opinions on this. Am I crazy for saying that was a penalty? Or not a penalty, excuse me.
Yeah, the first one, I agree with you. I don't think it should have been awarded a penalty.
Yeah.
I think Lautaro sticks his leg back, and it was very clever on his part. I think it was kind of astute, and it, you know, he played it. But the disappointing thing about that one, and I know the referee called it on the field, maybe he didn't see it the right way or was blocked or whatever, but when it goes to VAR, VAR, I think VAR should have at least had the referee, and I didn't see the game. I didn't watch the game. So did the referee, was he asked to go watch the replay or not? Do you know?
Yeah, he went to VAR. He upheld it. And look, it's sour grapes on my part, probably. I'm not, you know, Juventus fans aren't used to not winning some sort of championship at the end of the year. But the bigger significance of the match in all reality is this was the end of the line for Giorgio Chiellini. The guy who's played third most appearances in Juventus history. I mean, a mainstay of the club for almost 20 years. Paulo Dybala's likely last match with Juventus. They've already said they're not going to – he wants a big new contract. They're not going to give it to him at his age and at his legs. He's 28, but in reality, this is his 11th Serie A season. He started very young, and it's an old 28 for him. So it's really truly the end of an era at Juventus where – Chiellini and Bonucci is still there, but Chiellini was kind of the last mainstay of the eight consecutive Scudettos and
nine.
You know,
it's nine.
Yeah. Nine.
This is your club, Daniel. Don't sell yourself short.
Hey, of course. But yeah, so Chiellini's headed to MLS. Who knows where Dybala's headed? End of the line for Juventus, but still plenty of excitement across Italy.
So I do want to ask about that because it feels like the end of an era for Juventus. Now, they have Vlahovic, who's someone to build on kind of for the future, but Weston McKennie is still there. Where does Juve go this offseason? And does I think there's a lot of questions just around, like, kind of what's the next step for Juve? How do they get back to, you know, being a perennial Scudetto challenger?
Yeah, I think it was a good season in some ways because, okay, if Federico Chiesa, who tore his ACL, if he was in the entire season, I don't think Juventus would be finishing fourth. I think they would have won the Coppa Italia. they've got Matthias De Ligt from Ajax that they bought a couple years ago. This is his team now. That's going to be him stepping up. They need to improve the midfield. They did get the forward Vlahovic. So yeah, it's still transitioning. But and Weston McKennie is going to play a huge part next year. He's going to be expected to be a starter. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do in the offseason.
But still, finishing fourth, top four is okay for Juve, right? I mean, the goal was really to get in Champions League.
Yeah, it depends on who you ask. I think if you had won the Coppa Italia, you at least have something there.
Okay.
But it's a trophyless season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that there's ever a case where Juve finishes behind Napoli, you know, and both Milan teams and feels like, yeah, that was success.
Yeah, so with two fixtures left, we got AC Milan 2 points ahead of Inter, who won last year. But Inter has a goal difference. But in terms of difficulty of the two games coming up, does Inter have a little bit more of the difficult two games?
Well, here's the thing. And, yeah, like you said, so Milan is 2 points ahead of Inter, two games left. Inter travels to Cagliari tomorrow. And a game in Sardinia on the island is never easy. Cagliari,
although fun.
Not easy. And it's summer now. All the Italians have descended on Sardinia by now. But Cagliari is in the 18th spot. They're still in the relegation zone. If they win, they hop over Salernitana by a point. So this is, I mean, do or die for both teams. It's going to be a fascinating game, whereas Milan, their run-in is Atalanta, which is not an easy game, and then Sassuolo. Milan has won the championship one time in the last 20 years. 2010 season, they won the championship. It's their only title. We think of them as obviously a hugely prestigious club. Their success has come more in Champions League, if you can believe it, than actually in the domestic league. So I think all the neutrals out there are probably rooting for Milan. They have a history of choking right at the end of the season. All they need to do is win two games, and they'll win their first Scudetto in over a decade. So, you know, no shortage of excitement. I can't wait tomorrow. You've got Milan versus Atalanta and Inter versus Cagliari at the same time. It's going to be great.
So, Milan's last game is at Sassuolo or at home?
Yes.
Oh, they have to travel.
Yes. So, you know, it's going to come down to the last minute for sure.
The parallels between Milan and your team,
yeah,
Liverpool,
I was
going to
say,
like,
yeah,
oh it's, my
yeah,
gosh,
it's like it's the same. Trouble in domestic league, but win Champions League. But we want that title domestically, and I'm sure Milan does too. Let's talk about the bottom of the table. A little bit of disappointment for us that, you know, root for the American boys, particularly Venezia, right? Who are heading down, it looks like.
Yep. End of the line for Venezia. Unfortunately, they'll take the gondola back to Serie B next year. It's been a fun season. It's been very interesting to see. You know, what if was always the question. Could a team from Venice get back to Serie A? They did. It wasn't a terrible season. Okay, they're only, you know, their relegation is confirmed, but it's not like they're, you know, 20 points out of 17th place. They're going to finish close, but Venezia is down. Genoa is likely to be down. They would need a miracle. They have to win at Napoli next week. What's really interesting, though, guys, that I wanted to mention is that in Serie B, okay, we've already seen Lecce and Cremonese, which Lecce is a traditional pogo team. Cremonese is going to be in Serie A for the first time in almost 20 years, but they do a crazy playoffs in Serie B where third through eighth plays playoff games. So you finish all the way down in eighth. Yes, you have a chance. Now, the team that finished fourth this year, you'll know them from Serie A, from Formula One. TK will know this one.
Oh, yeah.
Monza. Monza is in fourth place, a city from just north of Milan. Do you know who Monza's owner is?
I do not.
No.
Tell me if you've heard this name. I know you have. Silvio Berlusconi.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So is it? So do we just go ahead and put them down as the ones that get promoted?
They were purchased from Serie C a couple years ago. Took them 1 year to get promoted. Now they finished in fourth this year. The playoffs are, you know, yeah, I mean, who knows? We'll pretend it's on the up and up.
Okay.
But we could see AC Milan, former Italian president, one of the richest people in the world, Silvio Berlusconi and Monza back in Serie A next season. Keep your eyes on the playoffs over the next couple weeks because that would be fascinating.
Does Silvio go to the games? Does he sit there in a suite and eat
And he's got Galliani as well. If you remember the name Galliani, who built a lot of those Milan teams, he just got the boys back together and bought a Serie C team and has got them on the cusp of returning to Serie A in the city, you know, of Monza, where that the famous for the F1 track. So the neutral in me certainly hopes that happens. It would make for a very interesting next year.
All right, well, super stuff from Italy. Craziness as always. It's always controversial in Serie A, but fun. And I am personally rooting for Inter because of my Chilean boys, particularly Vidal, who I want to get one. Scudetto, and you're going for AC Milan, I assume, right?
Of course, the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly. The lesser of two rivals. All right, well, Daniel, thank you so much. We expect an update soon in future shows once the season wraps up, and to see how things ended up.
Thanks, guys. Ciao.
And speaking of wrapping up, the Bundesliga wrapped up today.
It wrapped up today.
You are the resident expert, and you're going to tell us about why people keep invading pitches in Germany and those scenes in Stuttgart next on The Ticket. All right, final stretch here on The Kick Around. Tyler filling in for Peter today. Tyler, thank you. Peter is back next week. I will be out for the Hall of Fame induction, but you will slide into my chair, so you got back-to-backs.
That's right.
On the Kick Around.
That's right. Time to get comfy here.
That's right. You'll be so comfortable next week after having done it. You've been the fill-in before.
It's true. I've been around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what you're doing.
Yeah. But it's always nice. It's always nice. It's fun to be here.
It's good to have you, especially on the day that the Bundesliga wraps up. Because that is the day that you then have to, like, recap the season. And you are our resident Bundesliga expert.
Yes. We say Auf Wiedersehen to this Bundesliga season.
Yes. Well, not quite. There's still a little relegation playoff, right? But yeah. In terms of the season, it ended today. And there were scenes in Stuttgart.
Yeah.
Because we already know who won the league. Bayern won. Mm-hmm. 10 years in a row. We've talked about this.
We've been down that road.
Yes, and how will the Bundesliga fix the Bayern issue? And touched on that just a little bit, but let's talk about those scenes in Stuttgart because Stuttgart is a club that basically had to win today to avoid being that one team. The way they do relegation in Germany is that the bottom two go straight down, right?
Yes.
And the second to the bottom, they play in a playoff game against the third place team.
Right, right. So right. The Bundesliga has 18 teams, right? So 16th place, which is Hertha Berlin, will take on third place in Bundesliga 2, the second division, which is Hamburg.
Right.
Hamburg is a historically massive club.
And they've had a good year because they finished third, even though it's second tier, they finished third. So that's not an easy playoff match, right, or playoff series.
It will not be easy for Hertha Berlin, which it's still pretty wild that there's not... That Hertha can't be better, right? Berlin, capital, you know, massive city.
They've had management problems, though. That's part of the issue.
They have had management problems. They poured a ton of money into that club. They let Jurgen Klinsmann inexplicably be in charge of that club for...
That's where it all started, all these issues, right?
Jeez. Well, I mean, they had issues before, but they brought in... whatever. They brought in just someone completely ill-equipped to handle that job. To try to make sense of all of it, and it was bad. So, anyways, but Stuttgart needed to win today to avoid falling behind Hertha Berlin and going into that playoff against Hamburg. And
it was 1-1 heading into basically the last corner of the game?
It was. This is the second of 4 minutes of stoppage time. Okay. So Stuttgart
so
still had a little bit of work to do. But off of that
late
corner
enough
kick,
that the goalkeeper went up,
the
right?
The goalkeeper went up because, I mean, Stuttgart had to have this game, right? They had to have it against Cologne, who had secured at least something in Europe. They will be in a playoff spot for the Europa Conference League by finishing seventh. I did some research on that since last night, or last week, because I could not make sense of it.
But they've been there recently. Yes. I mean, semi-recently, right? Yeah. Cologne. Anyway, so.
So, corner kick gets flicked on from the near post to the back post. Defenders there to put it in the back of the net. Wataru Endo scores the goal in the 92nd minute.
And they're at home.
The fans absolutely go ballistic. The coach goes ballistic, who, we don't talk about this enough, but Pellegrino Matarazzo is the coach at Stuttgart, an American from New Jersey.
He is an American coach born in Jersey who played college football, college soccer here in the U.S., and then went to play like lower level leagues in Europe, right? That's how he ended up in Europe?
Yeah. And was a youth level coach for Nuremberg, who previously was a Bundesliga side.
So he was just coaching youth soccer in a German city, and now he's coaching in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, he looks very. He's 6 foot six. He looks slightly out of place, but
he looked
nuts.
Very excited.
He was losing it. Fans poured out of the stands once the final
another mass invasion. But you know, it seems to be okay. Like it's accepted, and it's not out of control. People mind their manners while they invade the pitch, it seems like.
I mean, maybe we need to go back to our conversation about different nationalities and the
and who does
the way
what.
They drink.
Right,
whatever.
Yes. But, okay. I might have to rescind what I said about
I don't know. So anyways, it was absolute scenes, though, there for Stuttgart. And look, good on them. That's a historic club, a club that has made a living out of being in the Bundesliga. To go down would have been pretty rough for them. And so... It was excellent to see.
Yeah,
really, that's
One of the things about promotion relegation that's just, we always talk about and people in football know, the relegation battle sometimes is just as or more exciting than the battle for first, especially when first place gets decided very early in the process. And, those scenes when they scored that goal almost at the death is just amazing. So good
awesome.
For Stuttgart. Now, first place was decided, Bayern won, but we still had some, and Dortmund was assured of qualifying for Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
Even, I think, heading into today, they had assured themselves second place.
Yes.
But it was still up in the air, like third, fourth, fifth, maybe, and who got into Champions League. And it ended up being Bayer Leverkusen and Leipzig, right?
That is correct. Bayer Leverkusen third, Leipzig fourth. If you told me this would be the top four at the beginning of the season, I would have said, that sounds about right.
You know why? Because of like the last six or seven seasons in the Bundesliga, these have been the four teams.
It's kind of been this. Yeah, Mönchengladbach every so often kind of hops up there and challenges whatever, but it's these four teams in roughly this order.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the biggest surprise, though, is Union Berlin, Europa League, fifth place.
Yes, your team that you told P1s when we first started having you on as our expert, our German soccer expert, you said, this is the team, if you have to pick a team that you should root for. And boy, a year later, it's paid off because now your team...
Yes.
If you did acquire them as your favorite team because Tyler said so, is now going to be playing in Europa League. For them, this is huge.
This is massive for them. Again, like I tell the story all the time because I think it's the most quintessential Union Berlin story, but they did a blood donation for fans to go and donate blood to then donate the money to renovate their stadium to get it up to the standards necessary to participate the next day. Like, incredible stories like that of how plugged into the community this team is.
Right.
And it's hard not to root for them.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It just seems, in like the scenes from Cologne when they just advanced to the Conference League, those were great scenes. And it just seems a level of, it's almost like grassroots fandom in a way, for all these top clubs. And it's a little bit, we don't just see that anywhere else.
Yeah, and I suppose the Bundesliga, and very specifically for me, Union Berlin, is the complete antithesis of what we've seen across much of global football, and that is the nation states owning teams.
Yeah.
These massive, financial entities owning teams and operating them for big profits and doing all these things. All of the things that I think sometimes might jade people about soccer, when I see a team like Union Berlin, it makes me feel like the game can still be used for good things.
That's a great point. At the same time, it's resulted in a league that has had the same champion for 10 years. And it's just, I wonder why, because the German league is good about balancing, ensuring that revenues meet expenses so that you don't overspend. Yet Bayern keeps winning title after title. And now, Dortmund's going to lose Haaland. So they're going to struggle to replace him. And I know that there's rumors that Bayern might be losing their striker, right? Their star player,
Lewandowski. After the final game of the season today, Lewandowski said that he was not going to sign a new contract with Bayern, which is interesting. He's got one more year left on his deal, so his deal expires in 2023.
Yeah.
And that is intriguing. There's been rumors of Barcelona interest. I don't know how they could afford him at this point. Do they just wait out his contract and wait till he's on a free next summer? Or does Bayern elect to sell him beforehand and try to get some kind of payment? They got him on a free in the first place, and so they got him on a free, won a bunch of titles. Do you need to get a transfer fee for him?
Right,
I honestly don't know.
I still feel like they're still Bayern without him, you know, but I think it'll help a little bit if he does leave.
So, Juve, we talked to Daniel in the last segment, right? Juve won 9 straight, and it felt like they had the same kind of stranglehold on Serie A that Bayern has on the Bundesliga right now. But what it took was Juve getting a little impatient, not winning the Champions League, feeling like, okay, we need to be bigger. We need to operate in the same stratosphere as Real Madrid, as Liverpool, those types of clubs. So they went out and irresponsibly bought Cristiano Ronaldo.
Right.
Now, Ronaldo was great for Juve. Mm-hmm. That's not the point. The point is they kind of blew up their model to try to be something that they weren't.
But Bayern won't do that.
Bayern
That's
probably...
The thing.
Bayern
won't do it. They're a machine.
They're too smart to do
They're efficient. They're a machine. And they deserve a lot of credit for the 10 straight titles. It's just sometimes I think... For the Bundesliga to attract more fans worldwide, and not that they need to, I think they're fine, and German people would say, our league's fine, but I think you need a little bit of a change at the top. You know, like, Serie A, La Liga, the EPL as well, you know, it's the same 4 or 5 teams, but it's still 4 or 5 teams.
So this is a big summer to keep an eye on what Bayern does, because Thomas Müller, Manuel Neuer, and Robert Lewandowski are all out of contract next summer. So what they do this summer, I think, will be a big indicator in terms of what their future plans are. If another team is to win the league anytime soon, it'll be because Sally Hamazic, the new kind of newer sporting director at Bayern, made mistakes this year.
Yeah.
So keep an eye on that.
All right. I'll leave Pepe talk and what happens to Pepe after this season, Ricardo Pepe, for you and Peter for next week. We have to get to the Europa League final preview because it gets played Wednesday. Europa League, it's not the Champions League, but it's still an important final. But what is intriguing about this particular final is that it's two clubs, one Eintracht, who finished 11th in the Bundesliga this year and hasn't had a lot of success at the European level. In recent times, or at the league level, although they've been they've been decent, and Rangers, who less than a decade ago, it's not called administration, but something similar to where mismanagement of funds sent them. They were forced to go down to the third or fourth tier in Scottish Hockey, and they had to work their way back up, and now they're fine. But for these fan bases, for their teams to reach the Europa League final is massive. It really is massive, because one of these two teams will win it and play in the Champions League next year. And that's the bigger story.
Yeah.
Is that one of these two teams, for these fan bases to have their team actually participate in the group stage of a Champions League, huge.
Massive. Absolutely massive. And both fan bases are fantastic. Like, whichever one wins, it'll be better for the Champions League to have either one of these fan bases in there. I'm excited because I don't know how to even begin to break down a matchup between a team from the Scottish Premier League and a team from
knows?
The Bundesliga.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely
right.
No idea. No. But I'm just excited to watch it. The game's on Wednesday. So.
I've seen that we have Dallas Cup has a friend who comes with Eintracht, who brings the academy teams all the time. And he's traveled. This is Armin. He's traveled with the fans. He went to London. And so he sends video of him just like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
They have a really, really, really good fan base. So kudos to both those clubs. And it'll be really super cool to have one of those two play in Champions League. Real quick before we go, FIFA got served divorce papers from their biggest sponsor, EA Sports. $150 million was what EA Sports pays FIFA on an annual basis to use the name FIFA in the game.
Right.
They won a little bit more money. FIFA said, we want $500 million.
What?
EA was willing to spend a little bit more, but what FIFA doesn't realize is that the name FIFA, the game's all about the engine and the relationships they have with other clubs around Europe, with other leagues, and so I don't know what FIFA's doing. Anyway.
That's right. Ridiculous.
So.
Wow.
All right, the show is over. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Tyler, for filling in.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Sam, thank you for... Great job producing. Jacob, the tickers. Creighton on the board. Very good job. Thank you, Soccer 90, for your sponsorship. And a shout out to my parents who are celebrating their 55th wedding anniversary today. So kudos to them. And we will see you next week here on the Kick Around. Saturdays 2 to 4 on the ticket.
broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Park, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM, Dallas-Fort Worth. KTCK FM, Flower Mound. A Cumulus Media Station.